They've even got things like modern lampreys down there. So they're having fun thinking, what were they latching on to?
So that research kind of knocks out that model of the lamprey and the hagfish, these jawless fish that live now, as being in our line, our own line toward us, right? Or does it knock them out, or you're shaking your head?
Yeah, it knocks them out.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
I agree, yeah. They're at the end of a very long branch, which until recently had very little fossil record behind it. And again, you need this fluky preservation, which somehow is capturing the soft tissue, this very soft cartilage, which lampreys have. So sharks have calcified cartilage. You have cartilage with a kind of crusty rind around it, made of little calcium phosphate plates. And it's held in a fibrous matrix.
Compared to my kneecap cartilage, what's the difference?
Well, your kneecap cartilage is glassy, it's hyaline cartilage, it's quite tough stuff. In lampreys, you've got another kind of cartilage. Well, you've got a couple of kinds of cartilage there, but some of it is called mucocartilage, which gives you an idea about how soft it is. So,
got it.
Yeah.
They don't have bones. Do they have skeletons, lampreys? Like a snake?
Well, hold on, I'll show you one.
Uh-oh, yeah. Here comes one.
Good, and I'll get a screenshot of this as well.
I have a piece of artwork I want to ask him about.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't you hold that up?
Let's see. Here's something that's perfectly dreadful for you. This is...
Oh, boy.
This is fooling around in the lab with the printer. So here's our printout of, you know, a handsome lamprey. If I tilt it in the light, you can see where its eyes are. And here's the big oral hood. That's the nose on the top of its head. So here, you've got the...
Why don't you hold that up to a little higher. There we go.
Yeah. This is...
What is that central...
Yes. Well, this is fooling around the lab. We decided to put a tinaculum coming out of its...
Oh, okay. So that's a joke.
That's a joke.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, that's...
Sorry about that. But here's the skeleton from inside.
Wow.
Oh, bring that in closer.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty tricky.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is all formed from, some of it's mucocartilage. Some of it is slightly more substantial cartilage. But you've got
the
this...
larger part is the head?
The brain. This is the brain running through to here.
Here's
This is... The nostril internal, so hind brain, midbrain, forebrain. This is where the eyes are located, either side here.
Right.
These are the ear capsules here. Okay.
So the smaller bits at the end, if you look at the photo, are the ear capsules. Yeah.
Yep.
Let me just.
So the eyes here, ears
well.
Here, nose on the top of the head. All of this bit in front here, all of this is specialized lamprey stuff. You don't get all of that in hagfish. And in fact, if you rip the front
end... You mean the business end. It's the business
this
end.
This is the business end, and it's all highly specialized, and it's to do with their suction feeding or if they're moving pebbles and stones around, and, you know. Yeah, it's the absolute business end of the fish.
That's so cool.
Well, I was going to ask you, Mike, with lampreys as models of what our... You know, I try to do these artworks and just try to, in one visual piece, that, you know, The Way We Were is one of my pieces of artwork. Actually, you just bought one for your friend there who's retiring. And that sequence, I just wanted to show, we don't know the exact links between the links, the multiple links, or just wanted an idea of taking us from who we are now and all the way back through our lineage. We know that we are from apes, etc.
I think you start with a fisherman,
then
you go back into a primate.
Yeah, we go back in that line, and we go back to the creatures like Tiktaalik. And so apparently, and then I threw a conodont in there, which I know is maybe off our lineage a bit, but... So if I'm knocking out some sort of jawless creature like a lamprey, should I?
Well, I thought conodonts are like, how old are conodonts? I thought they're like Triassic.
Well, no, they die out around the Triassic, at the end of the Triassic.
They do.
But my question is, we had a sort of armored fish phase, the ostracoderm phase. I should insert one of those into this way we...
You're talking about our lineage
through
that
time.
Ends up as human Homo sapiens.
Yes. Yeah, certainly you want to go back through a lot of ostracoderms because those are all, technical term coming up, stem group nathostomes. So nathostomes are the jawed vertebrates.
Spelled with a G.
Yeah, spelled with a G, like Nash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nasher.
G-N-A-T.
Yeah. Ganache. So if you've got Nashers, you're a nathostome, right? Now, the last time we had a common ancestor with a lamprey, the thing down there was jawless. So jaws evolve in our own deep history. And on that stem going down there, there are a whole series of, if you like, pre-jawed members of our own lineage. The lampreys and hagfish are going one way, and they've never gotten to the jawed space. They've done something else. And they've actually got a lateral bite. I talked about that, saying at the front end of their piston cartilage. Whereas on our side, you end up with the up-down bite.
Vertical bite.
But that comes on, in terms of evolutionary steps, somewhat later. And there are a whole series of jawless groups which are branching off early from our history. And they include things like heterostracans and the arendaspids I talked about, but also galliaspids and osteostracans.
There's a lot of terms in there, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of terms. But I'm going to have each one listed on your page with a definition and a picture.
Mike, you have mentioned moments ago here the end Devonian extinction event that kind of reordered the vertebrate line, our lineage.
Is it part of the Big Five?
Yeah, it is, but there's some new insights into what happened there at the end of the Devonian.
It's big and it's messy. So the Big Five extinctions, the end Devonian extinction, the one that's been part of the Big Five is a thing called the Kelvassar event. And that occurs about 15 million years before the end of the Devonian. For sort of people into the names of the subdivisions of the Devonian, it's a division between the Franian and the Fermanian. And the big signature there is really, and after all, these extinction curves are based on invertebrate fossils because there's many more of them. You know, finding decent fossil fish is tough, but finding dead shellfish in abundance. I'm not saying it's a doddle, but that's where people have done large-scale analyses, and that's where Raup and Sepkoski did the extinction curve. And they identified one of the Big Fives towards the end of the Devonian. And just to give you an idea about how big it is, things we worry about today, the reef systems that have evolved in the Devonian get clobbered. The reef systems get clobbered at that point. So an awful lot of invertebrates go down. And it was thought that you have a gradual decline of the jawless fishes and a kind of, you know, up curve of the jawed fishes through the end of the Devonian. But there's another event at the end of the Devonian called the Hangenberg event. And that's just before the end of the Devonian. That is marked globally by a number of signatures, one of them which is black shale. And I talked about that in popping up in South Africa. Now, what else is going on at that point? We've got idea that you've got a massive change in global temperature, and it appears that global temperature drops. That means you get ice caps formed, and that means with sea being locked up in ice, you have a drop in sea levels. And after all, most biodiversity is around the continent margins, so it gets a hit at that point. It's at the Hangenberg event that the vertebrates get hit hard. That's when, because it seems that the fishes kind of sail through, at least the jawed fishes, and even the big extinct, now extinct placoderms, etc., they seem to survive the Kelvassar event, and they keep diversifying. So people who know they're, you know, big, mean, armored fishes in the Devonian, Dunkelosteus, for example.
Right.
That's a big arthrodire placoderm. It's an apex predator. You get that in the Cleveland Shale, which is up towards the end of the Devonian, And you've got things like Dunkelosteus propping up in a fauna very like the Cleveland shell that comes out in the Anti-Atlas in North Africa. So you've got these top predators of groups that suddenly, wham, they get hit. And something like 80% of vertebrate biodiversity goes down in the Hagenberg event. And it's related to drop in temperature. The black shale is giving us a clue about low oxygen. So, and it may be that with the advent of marginal forests, for the first time ever around the continent margins, you're getting nutrients pushed into the inshore waters.
You mean like tannin type?
Yeah, but like you're getting eutrophication, the kind of thing where you get too much nutrients, agricultural spill off into nice trout streams, and suddenly you've got algal blooms, and it sucks all the oxygen out, and you've got a lot of dead fish because they're floating around in stagnant conditions. It's that kind of thing. We get algal blooms off Florida now, etc. These effects can be devastating. So we've got temperature fluctuation, we've got sea level drop, we've got evidence of eutrophication, anoxia around the margins. And the other thing that we got from the paleoclimate people is we've got a major change in CO2 levels in the atmosphere. And the CO2 levels were formerly high, much higher than they are now. But with the advent of the first continental forests, we've got all these structurally huge plants. For the first time, you've got large plants of modular growth. That means that they shed bits and keep growing. So they shed fronds. These are tree ferns, if you like, and the you know, sort of relatives of modern pine trees, but early takes on it. So these are architecturally modern forests. They're shedding stuff. They're capturing carbon out in the atmosphere, and it's the earliest coal measures. So carbon is being pulled out of the atmosphere, so you've got the opposite of the greenhouse effect. So it might have been that they had a kind of, you know, just edge effect, just enough to push us over the edge into this kind of what became a Bartic crust.
An ice age.
Yeah.
What is the black shale made of? Its composition?
It's clay, minerals, etc. Sediment is a high organic content in it.
Okay.
And within that, as I say, the aftermath of that is a trough in biodiversity, but it's also something that we're exploring a lot at the moment, or at least various groups are looking at it, because there are clearly some groups survive and other groups don't. And so why do we lose the placoderms? Why are there no arthrodires popping up in the Carboniferous? Why are there no antiarchs? So antiarchs is, again, little armoured placoderm fish. There's one there called Bothriolepis, which very eminent colleague of mine, Philippe Janvier, described as the cockroaches of the Devonian. You can go globally. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
So how come you don't pick up those in the Carboniferous? That would be a story if we went into the bottom of the Carboniferous and started picking up Bothriolepis. These things are abundant. And even things like Tiktaalik. You know, we have this story in our heads, not unreasonable, of, you know, we want to evolve to be tetrapods, amphibians. So you get towards the upper Devonian, you're getting things like Pandarichthys, Tiktaalik, Elpistostege, these fishes.
These are all tetrapods.
Well, these are all, things that...
Lobe-fin fish, yeah.
Yeah, they've got lobe fins, but their heads are beginning to look a bit more like a crocodile. They're getting their eyes on the top of their head. They're getting a big snout out the front.
But they're amphibious, though.
Well, we don't know. They're probably air-breathing.
Really? I thought Tiktaalik, they always showed Tiktaalik emerging from Neil Shubin's pond.
Yeah, but if you look at something like Acanthostega, Acanthostega's got, you know, lovely limbs, the most primitive limbs we've got, but it's got a thoroughly good set of gills. It's got a better set of gills than any modern lungfish. It's got lateral lines, sensory system that only functions in water.
Right.
Massive tail fin. So we've got a lot of experiments with living partly in water, partly out of water, and a lot of different reasons to breathe air and operate in the shallows. Those things are not found once you go into the Carboniferous. In the Carboniferous, we don't find anything like Tiktaalik, but we don't find anything like Acanthostega or Ichthyostega or anything else ending in stega from the Endevonian.
But animals have transitioned onto land.
No, they haven't. The earliest, earliest terrestrial biota, okay, the earliest terrestrial vertebrate fauna is from Scotland, and it clocks in at about 338 million years. So that's a
338, that's Mississippian?
Yes, it's Mississippian, and we've got a 20 million year, 15 to 20 million year gap, okay, before we find the earliest where we can say, these vertebrates are living on land. We've got swampy faunas beforehand, and we've got a variety of things, but we've got this fascinating period of the aftermath of the end Devonian extinction. And
But insects emerged earlier, though.
Well, insects of various kinds are beginning to diversify, but
onto the left.
The vertebrates are the last group, almost the last group, for us to find convincing evidence that we've got land-dwelling ones. We just beat the air-breathing snails.
So you worked on Acanthostega with Jenny Clack way back when, right? Yeah. Early on. So Acanthostega, for those who don't know, is a tetrapod, but it's still mainly probably living in the water, is what your research showed.
Is this from Greenland?
Yes.
Yeah, it's found there.
Yeah.
Yep. So this period I was just talking about is, I stuck the name on it, of Roma's Gap.
It's fascinating.
It's really, but it's now being researched. But of course, all the early research in the Mississippian, etc., all the geologists going in there were chasing coal.
Right.
So, all that early geologizing and some of the most fundamental work on stratigraphy and working out, how to map geology was driven by the search for coal, because you've got that imperative. It was fueling the Industrial Revolution. So if you go down early from the coal measures, who wants to know about the Tournaisian? What's there? Just a load of piffle, So
we need coal.
It hasn't been sampled as much.
Huh.
So there's a sampling problem there, but there's clearly something happened. There's a change. So we find the sharks, they made it through. The rayfin fish, they made it through. The lobefin fishes get hammered, except for the tetrapods and the lungfish.
The ones who get out of the land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Precisely.
Get out of that ocean.
And then eventually there was us.
Now, in doing research on this episode, Michael, I came across a Harpego fututor?
Harpego fututor.
Is that right? Did I say it right? How do you say it?
I say Harpego fututor.
I say Harpego fututor. Yeah.
Okay, Harpego fututor. Yeah. It is a...
It's from Bear Gulch.
Chimera.
Yeah.
And it has what looks like antlers. The temeculum coming out are a pair of antlers, right? Two rods covered in denticles, so they're covered in teeth, and they're articulated. I'm going to get a picture of this. What the hell is this Harpego fututor? Who named it? What is this head ornament?
It's Dick Lund who found it in... Dick Lund and Wendy Lund. They found it in Bear Gulch. And it's very like one from Scotland, an earlier one from Scotland, called Chondrenchelys. So Chondrenchelys is like a boring version of Harpego fututor. It doesn't have the antlers sticking off the top of its head. But the pair of them are actually thoroughgoing ratfish. They're actually very derived. And when you look at their skull, the skull is very much like a young modern Hydrolagus.
Ratfish.
The ratfish, really? Again, Puget Sound. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. Wow.
Or Hydrolagus trolli, my favorite one. But are the antlers, is that a tentaculum gone crazy? What?
I'm not sure what it is. It seems to come off above the orbit.
Yeah.
And it's not in the midline.
Hmm.
So histologically, it appears to be solid mineral material. It looks more like a jointed spinous affair to me. Whereas, as you know, Ray, from talking to Gareth, that the one coming off the forehead, the midline, is soft cartilage inside, and it's got muscle around the base, and obviously a soft tissue for generating teeth at the front. We don't have that histology on the antlers, as far as I know, of Harpego fututor.
It's almost like a hinge on the bottom.
Of that, yes. Yeah.
That it pivots on, it can move.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Dr. Michael Coates, I want to ask you a question. If you could step into a time machine and travel back into the vast corridors of deep, deep time, what perfect paleo period, what epic epoch, what era from oh so long ago would you want to transport yourself back to, and what prehistoric wonder would you want to behold?
I think I'd have to say I'd want to go back to the Midland Valley of Scotland in the Mississippian.
Yeah?
The Lower Carboniferous, because I've studied so many fishes and tetrapods and whatnot from that period. It would be great to see, you know, obviously thriving ecosystems. The invertebrates too, you know, saying the insect life.
So you have 1 foot in the water and 1 foot on
land. Yeah, I'd like to go snorkeling and have a look at some of the daft sharks, the absurd stuff that's floating around there. I'd like to have a look there. In the Midland Valley of Scotland at that time, you've got a large, brackish, swampy area, Lake Cadell, it's called. And so many of the localities we have in the Scottish Midland Valley, which tell us about the fishes and the tetrapods and the plants, etc., really kind of coming around the edges of that. And the fish fauna that I studied for my PhD, it's actually a marine one, from the west end of, if you like, that bit, which is a place called Bear's Den, a suburb of Glasgow.
Right. Which reminds me, there's a shark that we didn't talk, or a ratfish shark that we didn't talk about, Acmonistion zangerli.
Huh?
Yes, Acmonistion.
How do you say it? How do you say it properly?
Acmonistion.
Okay.
Atmon for anvil. Istion for sale.
Commonly called an anvil shark these days. Mike, can you describe one to me? I think you're grabbing something. There it is.
Oh, my goodness. There's one right there.
So that's
there.
The Bearsden shark.
When I played the Edinburgh Festival, down the hill from my flat was Mr. Wood's fossil shop. And I'd always go in and say, is Mr. Wood in? No, he's not in. And every time I'd go to Edinburgh every 2 years and play the Fringe Festival. And I always walk in there and say, is Mr. Wood at home? No, he's not. They had a Stethocanthus fossil in there. That's his discovery. And so that was always so much fun going into that beautiful little shop.
Was that his shark that you just held up?
Yes. So Stan Wood, I mean, this should be a whole further episode. Let me start. The story of Stan. So I worked very closely with Stan. And I was young Michael. I'd be tapped on my head by Stan. Hi, young Michael, what's your hand, etc. Hi, it's for the science, all of this. He was a hoot. He was an absolute genius at finding material. And Stan, while a private fossil collector, worked closely with universities and museums because he went and researched neglected old fossil localities, but also did his own legwork, self-educated, genius, found new localities. So Bear's Den, where I found them, west end of Glasgow suburb. The joke was that many members of the geology department lived there. And he went out there with his dog, Cherry, and his daughter. And there's a kid's playground with the Manse Burn, this little stream running through it. That's where he found that shark. And then he got funding to build a quarry there. A dig for 2 years, got local schools involved, otherwise all the kids would be there chucking, you know, nicking the pumps and throwing crap into the, causing floods. I mean, that happened a bit. But you had local kids involved, local schools involved, and he did it really thoroughly, pulling the sharks and the other fish out of there. I worked on the little ray fin fish from there for my PhD thesis. Sharks, then in 1986, there was a big touring exhibit made of Stan's finds at that point, because it was also at that point where he'd begun to find stuff at East Kirkton, the earliest terrestrial vertebrate biota. How did he find that? He loved football. His team was Hearts of Midlothian, and he was a qualified referee, but it was literally, the story goes, he was knocking around playing a game of football with kids, as in soccer, right? And of course, the thing is, you just put down a few jerseys to make goalposts, put down a few stones, you know, to weigh them down. So some kids dry stone wall, you know, nick them out, chuck them on top just to make a goalpost. He got interested in where the stone, the dry stone wall, came from, because he found a fossil tetrapod skull in one of them. So, of course, who does the wall belong to? The farmer. Where do you get the stone to build that? It's been there for ages. Comes from a defunct quarry up the hill, beginning of the East Kirk.
Wow. Thing.
What's the anvil all about?
It looks like it's carrying a surfboard on a stem.
Yeah. Rainer Zangerl, who worked on sharks, thought it was inflatable.
Right.
He thought it might be, you know, you could pump blood into it, etc. It looks sort of fibrous, and it would almost like resemble a pair of jaws, because you've also got all these teeth on the top of the head, as you also find in juvenile modern ratfish. They do have some tooth-like tentacles on top of their, if you like, their eyebrows. They shed them. So, again, all these signatures, they look a bit like them, they're growing tooth-like things in the same place. This thing on top of the head, did the histology of it, it is not soft tissue at all. It's actually got bone in it. It is rigid.
Huh.
So, what's it doing? Big question. We did some unpublished stuff, and I had a student, Kate Criswell, we did some basic kind of hydrodynamics on it. We found it's actually very cheap to have one of those. It's not an expensive thing to push through the water. What it does have an effect on...
Buoyancy?
No.
It can swim fast through the water, is what he said. So
it could swim reasonably fast through the water, but this thing is it must have acted as a keel. It may have improved efficiency at the back. Protection, but it also has a weird effect on, if you put a dye in the water where it's coming off it, you get these things, you get a plume, and it's a very concentrated plume coming off it. So perhaps it's got multiple functions. Protection, perhaps it's there also concentrating if it's releasing pheromones or something like that.
It's not used in mating?
Not obviously used in mating. There's some argument about whether they're only on males.
Right.
And the evidence isn't really clear about that. Yeah. There is, what you need to find is an articulated body with the ironing board, the anvil, present, but also a decent set of pelvic fins, so you can see it's a male because it's got the claspers on it. Yeah. Now, the one I just showed you, the claspers are there. You can check your photo. Good set of claspers. The only one I know of which has a decent thing but might not have claspers is a specimen in the Field Museum here in Chicago, which there are x-rays of. It's not been prepared out of the black shale matrix that it's in. So it's another species, possibly a different genus. I suspect a different genus.
Mm. So it's a female, and maybe it has the anvil.
It may be a female, but on the other hand, absence of evidence isn't conclusive. You know, it may be just incomplete pelvic fins.
All right.
Are there any individuals that are millions of years earlier with a nub or a part of surfboard, or is there an evolutionary progression to this? And then do they just die out and goodbye ironing board on top?
Well, that group, there are a great diversity of relatives known from actually the Midwest out to the West, from the Midwest black shales of Illinois,
these dorsal,
and Indiana.
What do you call them? Dorsal?
Oh, well, it's a derived fin spine. It's a kind of fin spine. And you see bigger ones and smaller ones, and then you've got a whole load of them come out at this locality, Bear Gulch, which is a bit younger than Bear's Den. But there you've got ones where there's a male and a female apparently caught in flagrante, and it looks like the male has got his hook through the gills of the female.
Really?
Literally hooked.
But that could be the landslide deposition.
Yeah, that could have been the reason they died. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like to think they were, engaged in whoopee.
The current Trump administration, under the direction of DOGE, which is the Elon Musk-influenced Department of Government Efficiency, has cut science grants and programs, many without any review or vetting, and across a wide range of programs with federal funding. My first question, do you personally know any researchers or projects that were or are directly impacted by these cuts? And in your opinion, and I'm pretty sure we know the answer to this, what will be the long-term legacy for the advancement of science in the United States?
Well, yes, I do know people who've had their grants cut because I'm a senior academic here in Chicago, and I'm part of the hospital. So you see people who are running medical research programs. They're getting cut. NIH has been savaged. NSF is in the process of being savaged. So you're seeing people doing, AIDS-related research, vaccination-related research, you know, those kinds of programs, NIH, are being cut. NSF, of course, worry about climate-related research, etc. Doge have moved in on NSF. It's a tragedy. The rest of the world is looking on in horror. They're seeing a giant in scientific research and progress, the U.S. research machine, is being decimated. Well, more than decimated. It's being taken to pieces. And we don't know how it's going to reassemble.
What do these researchers privately say? Are they scared? Are they obviously upset? How do you recover from life's work?
Well, what's happening at the moment is we're looking for ways of getting some kind of resilience going through it. How can we present the research in a way that would be more acceptable? Are there alternative sources of funding? How long can we kind of, in a way, the kind of work that I do, evolutionary biology, we've in many ways, we've had to operate on a shoestring for years, and there's a kind of robustness in that. I'm not saying it's a virtue, but, it's sort of mix and match funding. For example, I have a research project kind of in the balance at the moment. We don't know where we're going with it. Can we keep going without the funding?
Because it has federal funding.
Well, we're hoping to get federal funding. We don't know where we're going to go, but it's it's integrative approach. It's, as I say, working with developmental biologists and so forth. And what we're looking at, for example, here is the evolution of sensory systems and the natural experiment. So that has a lot of potential spin-offs in terms of, where do fishes place their senses? How do they operate? How do they change? How do they respond to different kinds of water pressure? It's a live, dead comparison. It's looking also at the diversity of developmental systems. So all of this is a kind of nexus, a knotty crossing, a node where different kinds of science come in together. So taking out one bit, can have...
Leaves a gaping hole.
Yeah, science is a whole. It operates, is there this apparently arcane, obscure stuff suddenly discover, it has a relevance. What I study is trying to understand biodiversity. And, I've linked it in our conversation today to extinction. And
then
groups don't recover from extinction. Groups respond. How do they change in response to extinction? It's not a case of, the reef systems went and it all came back to how lovely it was. No, it was never recovered to where it was. Things changed, things move on. But can we find a clue about which kinds of groups are more likely to bounce onto something new more rapidly? Or will you get effects like disaster biotas and things? So,
right. Is there a holy grail of a answer you'd like to find to a question that you have proposed?
There's a lot of questions.
Is there one? I mean, before you become extinct, Dr. Coates, is there something that you want to know the answer to that you'd love to find out through your research and your lab?
Oh, I'd love to know what's going on in the Ordovician. That missing chunk. I'd like to get down there and have a really good look. But the other bit I'm particularly keen to, I would like to see resolved, is possibly a more tractable question, is the route of the ray-finned fishes. That's the biggest and the most diverse group of vertebrates on the planet today. Now, molecular phylogeny, molecular data has made sense of, the abundance of fishes you see in, Saving Nemo or something like that.
Right.
But what we've got is the shrubbery at the base of the tree. It's a mess. It's an outstanding and frankly embarrassing mess, given that what we're supposed to be doing as a science, my branch of science, is making sense of the evolution of vertebrate life. The biggest, most outstanding problem is the root of the ray-finned fishes.
I wasn't aware of that.
Where they came from.
Yeah.
Where they came from.
Yeah, so we know they're down in the Devonian. They get through the Devonian and bam, post-Devonian, in that early Carboniferous, it's why it fascinates me, that period, they explode on the scene. They take off.
Which lends me to I'm blown away by time. I'm blown away by the immensity of time. And in that talk you gave on, we'll have a link to it, on science and wonder, how you describe the crinoids in this Birmingham shale, I think it was, billions and billions of individuals, blows me away when you think about the amount of time and the amount of life that exists in just one small area.
Mm. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Well, wow.
Well,
well, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike. For
waxing poetic.
Yeah, yeah. You guys getting all weepy-eyed there. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, well, it is, it's just mind-boggling. But I really do think that the work that you're doing, Mike, is important stuff. I can see how it relates to the world we're in now, these extinction.
To know the future, we must understand the past.
Yeah. And the world is going through catastrophic changes as we sit here. Anyways, well, thanks for taking the time to hang out with Dave and I today. And
yeah, thank you, Michael.
I look forward to getting back to your lab again someday, and I look forward to the publication of the paper that I've got a couple little pictures in, or at least one or two, in the Helotus paper. Hopefully
yes.
That's out soon. And I hope it makes world news, because the origin of the tentaculum has finally been figured out, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Crucial stuff.
All right.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
See ya. Boy, there was a lot of names.
A lot of Latin in there, man. A lot of Latin.
Yeah.
Even for me, I was like, what? I was writing notes, but...
Well, when I edit these episodes, I dive in and try to find the name, and half the time they don't know the spelling, and it takes me a while, but usually I'll have a link to every single fish and...
There's a lot in there, man.
There's a lot in there. I will have,
yeah.
I will have a link to
yeah.
everything. So if you are confused... Just go to Mike Coates page at paleonerds.com and you'll see what the hell we were talking about.
Yeah, but you know what I like about our shows, Dave, you know, besides getting hang with you, man, but is our, the guests, of course, but I learn something every time. Every time.
Yeah.
Every episode there's
yeah.
something.
I know.
I didn't know the Devonian really reordered so many things, and the Devonian extinction event toward the end there kind of took out all the lobe fins and stuff, you know. So yeah, it's pretty amazing
yeah,
stuff.
It's so cool. The Ordovician, I didn't know that that was a muddled blank.
It was a big,
where so much happened, but we don't have the evidence.
The gap is there.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah,
so what is your little what is it called, a mnemonic?
When you mnemonic.
What is it
mnemonic.
Called?
Mnemonic.
Mnemonic. Phenomenic?
Mnemonic.
It's MN? Is it MNE?
Yeah, that's how you say it. Yeah, it's an MN.
Mnemonic. Yeah?
Mnemonic.
Cambrian, Ordovician, Silurian, Devonian, Mississippian, Pennsylvanian, which is called, aren't they, they're sub of the Carboniferous, right?
Right. So Mississippian.
So the Carboniferous, so why is the Carboniferous the only period that has two sub guys?
I know we Americans use it. I know overseas they
right.
just say the Carboniferous.
Right.
But we've got Mississippian rocks in Pennsylvania. But
and
my
said,
mnemonic,
yeah,
my mnemonic for that is crusty old sourdoughs make perfect pancakes, toast, juice, and coffee.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And then
good.
I have another one, crazy
I
old
made one
stupid
was,
guy.
It was
you got one,
like,
a dirty one or something.
No,
don't
no,
you?
It's colorful old shells does make, and then it petered out.
You didn't get very far. Well, I have another one I kind of like, too, is crying over sleeping dragons may puzzle people, terrify, or joyfully convert.
But, you know, he covered so many topics from earlier guests and episodes, and it's hard for me sometimes to string them all together into a coherent picture in my mind of what all these animals look like and their ecosystems and their niches and when they lived and when they died and what was their evolutionary predecessor. And
well, you
is...
know, if you are a paleo nerd's completist, then you've listened to all 80 plus episodes and you can remember them all. He references a lot of things that we have talked, you know, we
yeah.
talked about Tiktaalik with Neil Shubin, of course, we
yeah,
talked about...
Yeah, then there
about...
was the Agnathians with Dr. Pradel in France.
Oh, yes. And, of course, the Enoptereans. We talked with Alon about that. And
when
the,
he said Gnashers, was it Nathians? Gnashers meaning teeth? Is that what he meant?
Yeah, or... yeah, Nashers. Like, well, okay. No, like GN is, the right. G is silent anyways. Right. Yeah. So anyways.
Very cool.
But it's a sunny day here, man. I'm going to go down and look at the tourists and hope that maybe okay. They're buying some of my t-shirts so I can afford this extravagant lifestyle.
I'm going to take my dog to the park and have him continue his training.
Okay. Has he been in the room all along?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's awesome.
Right there.
With a dog bark and a crow cry, I say goodbye from Ojai.
Maybe instead of going down to the ships, I'm going to go back into the forest, Dave. I'm going to
walk
into the forest now. The forest is calling. A babbling brook is there.
There you go.
I want to see what it has to say.
Okay. I know what they say. They say that this dying salmon gives life to the trees.
That's the secret. It's in the trees, man. It's all in the trees, dude.
All right, Ray.
Okay, over and out.
Till next time.
See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for being a paleo nerd. Help us spread the word of science. Rate us on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can even email your questions and comments to nerds@paleonerds.com. Did you know that each episode is paired with photographs and links? Check out paleonerds.com for photographic evidence that everyone here has been a paleo nerd for a long, long time.
I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. Don't you understand? I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. I'm a paleo nerd. Baby, I'm your man. Have you ever loved someone just as I love you? Can't you see I'm sorry for each mistake I've made? Can't you see I've changed, dear? Can't you see I've paid? Be a little forgiving. Take me back in your heart. How can I go on living now that we're
we said goodbye. I guess that's the reason why I sit and cry. I miss you, baby, every day and night. It's been so long since I held you tight. Everything's different since you went away. It gets so lonely every night and day. I can't help feeling that you ought to know. I love you, baby, and I miss you so. Nothing ever seems the same. My sunshine has turned to rain. Every time I hear your name, been so long since we said goodbye. I guess that's the reason why I sit and cry. I miss you, baby, every day and night. It's been so long since I held you tight. So long since we said goodbye. I guess that's the reason why I sit and cry. I miss you, baby, every day and night. It's been so long since I held you tight. Everything's different since you went away. I get so lonely every night and day. I can't help feeling that you ought to know. I love you, baby, and I miss you so. Seems the same. My sunshine has turned to rain. Every time I hear your name, my heart becomes a burning flame. It's been so long since we said goodbye. I guess that's the reason why I sit and cry. I miss you, baby, every day and night. It's been so long since I held you.
But I'm moving on. But I'll keep singing this same old song. It seems like a feller just can't forget the past. Reached my destination thinking I was free, but you were at the station just a-waiting for me. I'm a-telling you, baby, that bad news travels fast. You a bad news, baby, so I'm on the lam. But you can travel faster than a telegram. Old 97 ain't got a thing on you. The Pan American down to New Orleans, the Tennessee Central or a flying machine. Can't catch you, baby, cause bad news travels fast. Got married, 'twas a secret deal. Then I found out how you folks did feel. Then for miles around we could hear that shotgun blast. So I decided to take my pill, but now I figure I paid the bill. I don't want you, baby, 'cause bad news travels fast. Guitar in the gunny sack. I'm gonna keep on a moving, ain't a coming back. I hear the freight train whistle, that's coming in at last. Got a handful of trouble, got a heart that's sore. I'm a getaway daddy, I'm gonna move some more. I'm a telling you, baby, that bad news travels fast. Up on reason to you, but all is not.
only mistaken. A small consolation, but I know just how you feel. You got your heart broke, go running from the reason. Got your heart broke, don't give up on believing in me. Heart broke, well, who kept me from leaving with my heart broke? That needs some good touching. Nobody said that it would not be worth it. The human conditions continue such. You got your heart broke, go running from the reason. Got your heart broke, don't give up on believing in me. Heart broke, well, who kept me from leaving with my heart broke? You got your heart
vacation. I need a change of scenery. I'll see the sights, go out at night. There'll be no time for your memory. I'll get a new apartment, make friends that don't know who you are. 'Cause when I'm through, I'm really through, if I can just convince my heart. Oh, but my heart says I'm not so smart. My heart tears my plans apart. My heart won't admit we're through, 'cause my heart, oh, my heart still belongs. I'll call some old phone numbers, and I'll throw a party for a start. I've made a vow, it's all over now, if I can just convince my heart. Oh, but my heart says I'm not so smart. My heart tears my plans apart. My heart belongs to you. Oh, but my heart says I'm not so smart. My heart tears my plans apart. Oh, my heart won't admit we're through, 'cause my heart, oh, my heart still belongs.
Hear the rain coming down and the roof won't hold her. Lost my job and I feel a little older. Car won't run and I look grown colder. But maybe things will get a little better in the morning.
Maybe things will get a little better.
Little
real grass don't grow when the sun's too hot. Oh, my world is going to pot. Might as well like it, cause you're all that I've got. But maybe things will get a little better in the morning. Maybe things will get a little better. Work your fingers to the bone. What do you get?